All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back. And today we are into Arya 9 of A Storm of Swords. We have a small amount of news coming out of the Game of Thrones verse, I guess is what we'll call it. Matt, you seemed unsure in the intro. Did you think you were on
I think it, I said pod cat. Podcast?
You said, well, my cat just meowed, so maybe it is a podcast.
I didn't say podcast. I was actually thinking about making a joke there, but I ended up not doing it. And so I was like, because then I was thinking about it, and I was like, I'm going to have to edit that out, you know? And so sometimes Jimmy and I make jokes, and it's like, you know, and then we laugh, and then I have to end up editing it. And I was like, I don't feel like editing it.
I respect that.
Now I may edit this whole section. I don't know. No, we'll leave it there. There are outtakes. I have a big, huge thing of outtakes saved that I should release it.
Yeah, some of the old ad reads were pretty funny.
Jeez. Especially those ones for like Hims and Manscaped. And
yeah, I don't think the companies would have appreciated the uncut
Probably not. But hey, they were fun. They were fun nonetheless. But yeah, you know, Jimmy, first of all, before we get in here, how are you doing, man?
You know, it's been a trying few months.
Still employed.
Still employed. somehow, dude. I don't know. It was more of a bloodbath at my job this week. I'm still shocked that I'm around. Just a lot of uncertainty in my professional life at the moment. But overall, things have been pretty good. You know, I'm reading a lot of different books. I'm rereading some of my favorites. Obviously, I get to read A Song of Ice and Fire every week, which is really fun. And just looking forward to the spring and the summer and getting out and, you know, hitting the golf courses again and walking. And, you know, I like my house, but I'm tired of sitting in it.
Yeah, you quite literally have a dream for spring.
I do. I have a dream for spring.
I am in the winds of winter. I can't turn my camera, unfortunately, that way. I mean, I probably could, but I don't think anybody'd see it. So, because I have some stuff in the way. Man, it is snowing out here
in Portland.
And it doesn't snow very often in Portland, so I built a fire. It's snowing, man. The winds are upon us.
Yeah,
but hey, you know what, that brings us to some news. Unfortunately, not Winds of Winter news,
but yeah, I don't know if we'll ever get Winds of Winter at this pace.
I'm sure we will at some point, but we did get a little bit of news. This was from a Deadline. I can probably share this here. HBO drama chief touts big House of the Dragon season 3 battle talk. Knights of the Seven Kingdoms 3-season plan teases new Game of Thrones spinoff. A lot of the stuff is stuff we already know, mm-hmm. right? Like we know that they're going to have they talked about an Aegon the Conqueror thing. But hey, season 3 is going to open with the Battle of the Gullet. That is pretty much confirmed, which is pretty much what we thought was going to happen anyway, because we were surprised when that isn't how season 2 ended. But so, you know, we are going to get that. A little bit interesting news to me here more is like Knight of the Seven Kingdoms 3-season plan.
Yeah, this is new. I don't think I remember hearing this.
Yeah, so right now basically they said that that's kind of the plan right now is 3 seasons, basically, because that's all of the text we have for it. I mean, we do have a little bit more in, you know, World of Ice and Fire and some of the other histories just has been told throughout the series. Like, obviously, we know Dunk goes to Summerhall and things like that, but that's the plan right now, because that's basically maps out all of the 3 novellas that George has written. They all seem very like pleased by what they've seen so far, and you know, it's coming later this year. I don't believe we have an exact release date for it, but just that it's coming in this, you know, second half of this year. And then they talked a little bit about a Game of Thrones offshoot, but they didn't say really what it was. We have another spinoff that we're working on right now, one of which I won't get into, is very promising, and it's still in the Targaryen line. There's a number of other spinoffs we can't really guarantee what's going forward, but they are very big budget on the other ones. I would say this is the most intimate one, I think, talking about A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms. So, you know, should we be nervous that A Knight of the Seven Kingdoms isn't big a budget? No, because it's not really meant to be. It is it's a smaller story.
Yeah, and honestly, that's good.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, because where would you put that budget? The budget would go to waste.
Yeah, not only waste, but like also, I mean, it'll be less on there's a lower risk whenever you have a show like this. So I think cuts and or being canceled is way less of a concern. Though first and foremost is almost always quality. There are some quality shows that get canceled, but I think that this is probably a good thing overall, that we can get a show that doesn't cost $1 billion in this universe, because there's more likely going to be those type of shows coming out in the future rather than all big budget stuff. But also, you know, Matt, there's only so much more to adapt as far as like from the content we have, you know, like,
yeah,
I was thinking about this, and it's like, I get really, really excited for this, for everything that comes out, because why not give it a chance? Why not be excited? Doesn't hurt to be optimistic or to be curious about what's coming out. But, you know, Dunkin' Egg, Aegon the Conqueror, you know, why do Robert's Rebellion at some point?
Probably? Yeah, we know we're getting the play, Robert's Rebellion play.
Yeah. So then, I mean, there's other things that we could do as a limited series, possibly, or maybe a movie, but I don't know how much more after that, right?
At what point do you think they're going to, because I do think this will happen. At what point do you think they just move into original content?
Well, that's my question. It's like, and what does that original content look like more so? Are we going to, maybe they see Dunkin' Egg and it excels. Let's just say it's a smash hit, cleans up awards, good solid ratings throughout like Succession levels. Do you see a new strategy from the studio and from the network to go down stories that are more intimate and less big budgety? Because in a lot of ways, dude, like Game of Thrones was kind of a lower budget show. Not really, okay, comparatively, but season 4 did not cost nearly as much to make as season 8. And sure. And the idea became bigger, better, blockbuster type thing, which we think robbed the show of a lot of the things we loved of it, which was the methodical pacing, the very logical writing that was there, even just sheer amount of lines of dialogue, like you've always mentioned, of how they got shorter, less dialogue as the seasons went on, and coincidentally probably made the show a little bit worse. So maybe we could see a return to that like style, right? Of not needing it to be the biggest blockbuster in the world. Now, reputation does a lot for branding, right? Like when you go to a Star Wars movie, there's a certain level of spectacle that you are required to provide, I think. But Andor was way less of that. And Andor was super successful. So, but you know, we're not sure. And I'm not a Star Wars guy, and I don't want to make it all about Star Wars, but like, I don't know where the future of Star Wars goes. And maybe they're considering the Andor success. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But Dunkin' Egg is kind of a good test run to say, hey, are there smaller, lower stake stories that we can tell in this universe that aren't going to cost us $1 billion and all this CGI money and still be successful that people want to watch? So a lot of rides on Dunkin' Egg, and I think maybe the future direction of Game of Thrones stories on screen.
Yeah. The biggest advantage, and this is kind of the difference between the two, in a way, you still kind of have this somewhat with Game of Thrones, is in Star Wars, essentially what happened is George Lucas releases those first three movies, and then the expanded universe starts, in which he basically says, hey, a lot of you guys can write stuff. It'll be like officially released. You can write all these extra stories, and you have essentially, I mean, the expanded universe went until Disney bought it in like 2012. So you're talking a little over like 30 years worth of lore that's written. And some of it, like George helped, you know, work on or provided details. Cause a lot of it, there were some parts where he's like, nobody's allowed to touch this era. Like the Clone Wars. Right. Yeah. And he's like, nope, can't do this because I'm going to do something with it at some point. So you did have this backstory and future story and all this stuff that was came out. And then when Disney bought it, they came in and they said, all right, all that stuff is no longer officially canon. Some of it will be, some of it won't. We get to create our own. Mm-hmm. The difference here is that George is still very much George Martin in A Song of Ice and Fire is very much involved in it. And he could say, yeah, I'm down for this story, or yeah, I'm down for this story, because he's already actually okayed original content, right? Like, he okayed the Game of Thrones video games. He, you know, and he, we don't even know, he probably did have some involvement in some of that stuff, because kind of the other, then you have the other side of this thing, even at Warner Brothers, is like Harry Potter, where she, J.K. Rowling, is like much closer, like, no, you guys can't touch it unless I say so.
Right. Yeah.
And like, that's why actually those three movies, the Fantastic Beasts movies, flopped, is because she's not a good screenwriter. Right. Like, there's a difference. Like, George is good at writing television because he's done it. Like, they're two very different mediums, writing books and writing that. Yeah. And like, Harry Potter worked for so many other reasons that are beyond just telling good stories. Like, it's, you know, there were so many levels to it. Like, the kids got older each group, each book, right? So the content reading got more advanced. There are so many factors that went into that being good, rather than just like, I mean, obviously there's a ton of reasons that A Song of Ice and Fire is good, but you know what I mean? Like, Harry Potter is ultra specific. Whereas, like, you can look at Game of Thrones and compare it to Lord of the Rings or Wheel of Time, and they're all good fantasy things. Whereas, like, Harry Potter works kind of also because it's like a kid's book. Like,
well, that's, it's a wider net.
It's a very specific structure that helped it. And that's one of the things that didn't help for the mainstream audience, other stuff inside of that universe, like the Fantastic Beasts movies. So here, I think it is possible that we could maybe get them after they do some more of the few areas. They even they tried to do Blood Moon, like the origin stuff, and that didn't work. So maybe we will get them to say, hey, we want to create like an original story. I mean, there's tons of stuff you could do about, like, you know, just members of the Night's Watch dealing with wildlings at any point really in time, right? Maybe we get Blood Raven's story, which would be, yeah, we have the framework for it, but you could go do something totally original, or you could just make a totally original character. Here's a new group of Night's Watch members that you've never heard of, or here's a special group of knights that we've never even talked about. We just want to create it because we think it'll be cool and it can exist inside of this universe. Because that is what Star Wars is doing with The Mandalorian and with Andor and Skeleton Crew and all of the stuff they're doing now is original characters and stuff in this universe. So I definitely think we will get it at some point.
Yeah, I wouldn't bet against it, especially just because that's how television and Hollywood kind of works now. We'll see how it goes. Like, I'm up to seeing how it goes. I'm always a little iffy about original content not coming directly from George. It always makes me, like, or really any creator. The one thing HBO has done a good job of, though, is not overwhelming us with the amount of spend. Like, it's not like the Marvel thing or even the Star Wars thing where you feel like every year there's four things coming out. You're like, okay, it's chill. Like, relax a little bit here. That doesn't seem to feel that way. In fact, I've been seeing a lot of people get upset that the fact that House of the Dragon season 3 just started filming. I've seen people in my circle and from the book community saying, you know, these TV shows take forever to make. And it's true. They do take so long now. And it does maybe lose a little bit of steam, but it always seems to come back, like, roughly, if the show's good enough. But you're in a better position when people are wanting more and wanting it faster than if people are saying, slow down, we have too much. So at least there's that, I would say, from HBO, is that they understand not fatiguing the audience at this point. And it's also going to be very interesting to see how tonally different Duncan Egg is from House of the Dragon, and it being a little bit of a more intimate, slower perspective show, whereas like House of Dragons is kind of a historical epic, right? So yeah. I think even the fact that they're going to be two vastly different shows in the same universe will also keep us from feeling too fatigued, hopefully.
Yeah, I think once a year is honestly perfect. If it's not House of the Dragon, like, the fact that you're still getting something big inside of that universe, like, once a year for a show is really good. Because if you look at some of the other, like, a lot of most other big shows obviously don't even have something to piggyback off of.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like Stranger Things Man, oh, like, yeah. It feels so far between.
They still have another season or something, right?
Yeah, it's coming out this year. It's gonna be in like two parts or something. Oh,
hasn't
like
it been
that.
Like 4 years since?
Yeah, it's been a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. Does anyone
care? Absolutely. Yeah. Really?
I mean, but I'm not aware. I didn't like the show personally, but
oh no, dude, Stranger Things.
I tried season one twice, and I don't like TV though. I'm not a big
yes. I was season one of that show is very different than the rest of the seasons. They have a very different season one has a very different feel to it than the rest of the seasons. But I'm just using that as an example because like Star Wars, there's something every couple months, right? Marvel, there's something like every day, essentially. You know, it feels like so the Marvel fatigue is real, and I think them doing the multiverse was the dumbest idea ever because now it's like none of the stuff even matters, right? Yeah,
it's a little rough. The nice thing about Game of Thrones is that it's not that big, and I don't mean popularity. I mean literally the breadth of it. Like, yes, there's centuries of millennia of history or whatever, but like it's not a universe with like alternate timelines or anything. So like, I think that there's like a limit on how much you can actually do, which is good. I don't think that that's a bad thing personally.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great that sports have a layoff, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, football season. Like if football were on actually every week, like it'd be too much.
Yeah.
You would lose interest. So I think it's good. And I think they're pacing this very well to give us enough time to watch. Okay. And now it's not every week where it's just too much and overwhelming.
Yeah. And also, by the way, you know, if you have same people working on some of these projects, you also risk burning out the creators. In the actors and the workers on the show too. So, because I'm sure a lot of these shows share like costume designers and makeup
You can look them up.
Yeah. So for, you know, you got to think about it from that perspective. You don't want to burn these people out. You want to hopefully get as much out of them as quality as work as you can.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. All right. Well, with that, Jimmy, let's dive into today's chapter, which is Aria 9, another short chapter. I was actually like listening ahead, which sometimes I do. You know, sometimes I'm listening to just the like this week's chapter. Sometimes I'll let it play and listen to a few chapters ahead. Mm-hmm. Man, I know we keep saying like we're getting close to the big event. We're really getting close to the big event now. But once we hit that, it's just like it's like a whirlwind. After that, like every chapter down the line until the end of the book is just like it's. I mean, it's like a sprint once we actually hit the Red Wedding, and we are very, very close to it here. So
how about the final line of this chapter?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We might be able to make it to your uncle's bloody wedding.
Ooh, well, hey, we're about to get into it.
Oh, George. So
here we go. Arya attempts to kill the Hound at night while the man is asleep, but he awakens and takes the rock from her hands. They reach Lord Harroway's town, but find it flooded. Sandor promises to pay some ferrymen to take them across the Trident, but gives them only the parchment Lord Beric had given him, promising reimbursement after the war. Arya tells Sandor that she had once been captured by his brother, and the Hound finds it amusing that Gregor never knew who he caught. Clegane says, I'll be sure to tell him that before I cut his heart out. She asks why he would kill his brother, and the Hound asks, didn't she ever want to kill a brother or sister? He realizes from Arya's expression that the wolf bitch hates the pretty bird. Arya and her sister don't get along. Sandor admits that maybe he is a monster for killing so many, but also tells her that he saved Sansa's life when the mob tried to kill her. The Hound informs her that he is taking her to the twins and will ransom her to Robb and perhaps join the young wolf's service because even a dog gets tired of being kicked.
Dang.
Yeah.
Fantastic, man.
I don't think there's any chance that they would have let him join.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Robb may have, Catelyn would have, the only way that could happen is if it was to set up even more Catelyn being like, Robb, what are you doing?
Yeah. Another maybe folly or odd.
Yeah. That would be the only way in which I could see George actually writing that.
Mm-hmm. Man, is Hound the best side character in the series?
Oh yeah. The Hound is,
I mean, some people might argue he's a main character, but I consider any non-POV character.
In the show, the Hound is probably, he's in my top three.
Oh, yeah, show Hound. I mean,
so good. Yeah. Yeah.
So much charm. Do you feel the Hound is a bit more gritty when you're reading him rather than watching him? You know what I'm saying? Like, he's so mean to this little girl, Arya, which we know she's been through a bunch of stuff. But, like, I find the Hound to be more troubling, I guess, when I read the books.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I've never, even when I was reading it and even watching it, like, the Hound to me immediately just came across as a good guy. I mean,
well, I agree with this as far as the show. I actually agree.
Think in the book, I think it's just obvious, like, from the minute you see how much Joffrey rips on him.
Yeah.
That I think it just sort of felt pretty obvious to me that, like, either this guy's gonna be a good guy or he's really not that bad. Like, yeah, he's obviously morally gray and, you know, kills the butcher's boy. Very and like, much. I'm not, you know,
yeah.
Yeah, he definitely does things, but on the scale, you know, he's far more on the, like, you're probably gonna be rooting for this guy and be on his side than view him as a total enemy.
Yeah, I mean,
I think it's also easy because you look at his brother, he kind of has the Tyrion thing, right? Yeah. Or it's like, yeah, Tyrion's a Lannister, but he's not Cersei or Jaime or Joffrey or Tywin.
Which is the beginning of the series, right?
Yeah, same thing. Like, you look at him, but you also look at the mountain and you're like, all right.
Yeah, it kind of gets away from, like, the idea that all, like, what people in this world in Westeros actually believe that if you're from a certain house, you act a certain way and you are a certain type of person. And we can just kind of categorize you that way. And we can move on from that. Right. And how many times does the Hound get accosted for the things that his brother has actually done? Right. Like, it's just all the Clegane's. Oh, the Lannisters. Right. Oh, the Starks. And they're all supposed to be the same. And what George is doing by providing us more intimate POVs and conversations is he's showing that obviously that's not how the world works, right? That people can be an exception to their, you know, bloodline or family banner or whatever else. I think it just takes a little longer for me to get there with the Hound in the books. And maybe also it's because of the direct contrast of Arya. So, like, Arya's done a lot of things at this point that I would consider to be almost like fantastic, like fantastical. The fact that she's, like, killed someone and she's escaped Harrenhal and she's doing all these things, Jack and Hagar. But at the end of the day, you almost forget she's like nine. She's 8 or 9 years old. And watching the Hound interact with her provides, like, a really interesting contrast, because we look at this girl who we think is, like, you know, pretty tough and able to do things that she shouldn't be able to do at this point in her life. But then you compare her to someone like the Hound, who is, you know, extremely powerful, but also older, more experienced, done way more vile things. And you start to see that the Hound is what Arya could end up becoming.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost don't want that for her while also still having sympathy for the Hound, which is why their dynamic of the relationship is kind of wonderful. And I think the Hound in some ways is actually trying to steer Arya away. Now, on the show, they actually deliver on this relationship dynamic when he tells her it's not worth it. Leave. Right. And then he goes and finishes the business with his brother. But in the books, we haven't got there yet. But it's definitely to me, the Hound almost being like, you don't want to be like me. You don't want to be all about vengeance and this and that. So it's a great contrast to show that Arya still has potential not to be like this dark entity that she's kind of going down the path of. And also furthering Arya's quest for agency and in person and who her person is. She is now Arya Stark again after not being Arya Stark for a while. She claimed her name earlier in the book. And now she's out of the Brotherhood Without Banners, but now she's being controlled by the Hound. And she's again trying to find a way to get back to her family so she can have agency and have a choice in where she's going and what she's doing. And the Hound, I think, is the final piece of this to where now we'll see her go off the Braavos, and then she has another kind of mentor with the House of Black and White. But I think for him, it's about him like giving her a warning, you know, like, don't become like me, which will play off in later books. So I just love the dynamic between Arya and the Hound. I've always found it fascinating. And I think that this is a good example.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to say ahoy or land ho and not feel weird about it. So here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance offers access to the largest towing fleet on the water. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to say, shiver me timbers, and not feel weird about that either. Get more with GEICO.
example of how George takes two characters and actually makes them better because they're together.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, and their journey together, even though it's actually pretty short
in the book. Yeah.
And, you know, like, and it's, and like you said, it's such an interesting dynamic because from the get-go, Arya, and she even says in this chapter, right, like, I'm going to kill you. Yeah. Right? And, like, you know, she's got the list and she's got the names and everything. Yeah. And, like, by the end of their journey together, she kind of starts to like him a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, that's why she doesn't kill him.
Yeah. Begrudgingly, I think that she has maybe taken him off her list in a different way. Yeah. Which is really good character development for Arya, because it had been really easy just to write a vengeful 9-year-old assassin girl who just kills without regard. But yeah. And this is an example where we see maybe a little bit of that tenderness that Ned Stark had.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll read a little bit here. And this is at the end of the chapter too, and I'll paraphrase and skip some of it here. But Clegane offered her a chunk of cheese on the point of his dagger. You're a little fool. What good would it do you if you did get away? You'd just get caught by somebody worse. I would not, she insisted. There is no one worse. You never knew my brother. Gregor once killed a man for snoring, his own man. When he grinned, the burn side of his face pulled tight, twisting his mouth in a queer, unpleasant way. He had no lips on that side and only the stump of an ear. So I did so know your brother. Maybe the mountain was worse now that Arya thought about it. Him and Dunsan and Polliver and Raff the Sweetling and the Tickler. So, like, even right there, right? Mm-hmm. So Arya and you're thinking, like, how could he be any worse? And then she literally talks about, like, how his face is,
yes,
you know, so disfigured. But then immediately thinks, well, you know, actually, maybe his brother is worse. You know, like,
yeah.
George literally paints him as a monster and then mm-hmm. is like, no, but there's still a worse monster out there.
Well, and who made him look like that would have been the person who they're speaking of at the
exactly.
time. So it's almost an example of, like, you know, he is kind of telling the truth because he's experienced this as well from his brother. This is also beautiful writing in a manner. I mean, obviously beautiful is a weird way of putting it, but it's actually great writing. And in a lot of fantasy I read, there's so many static descriptions, you know, I hear it all the time, you know, the 3 pages of description for every single person. And sometimes you wonder, well, what was that for? Why are we doing static descriptions? George is describing his face in that moment. He's had thousands of pages now, right? To have described that face. And maybe he has
but yeah, certainly not to this detail.
And who is seeing that face and taking note of those details? And like you said, it's almost telling a story through his features. So that description is actually going a long way for characterization and for the realization of Arya to see that, like, well, maybe he's not as the most evil. Maybe his brother actually is worse. And it shows the Hound to the reader in a different light as well. And I think you can garner some sympathy for him. In this moment. So I think that's great writing and a great description and a great time to put in that description.
Yeah. And it continues on a little bit here too, as she starts talking about it, as he starts talking about, like, how he wants to kill his brother. And then she talks about, like, he actually caught me once. And then he realizes, you know, how stupid he was for not realizing who he had. But then he goes on to say, he's like, it wasn't the first time he'd talked of killing the mountain, but he's your brother. Arya said, didn't you ever have a brother you wanted to kill? He laughed again. Or maybe a sister. He must have seen something in her face then, for he leaned closer. Sansa, that's it, isn't it? The wolf bitch wants to kill the pretty bird. No, Arya spat back at him. I'd like to kill you. Because I hacked your little friend into, I've killed a lot more than him, I promise you. You think that makes me some monster? Well, maybe it does, but I saved your sister's life too. The day the mob pulled her off her horse, I cut through them and brought her back to the castle. Else she would have gotten what Lolly Stokeworth got. And she sang for me. You didn't know that, did you? Your sister sang me a sweet little song. You're lying, she said at once. You don't know half as much as you think you do. The Blackwater? Where in the Seven Hells do you think we are? Where do you think we're going? And then she's thinking back to King's Landing. And then he's like, no, he's like, stupid, blind little wolf bitch, which also, by the way, blind little wolf bitch. She will be blind later. So that's a cool little thing there.
Nice.
Right. And, you know, then he talks about, like, I'm going to take you to Trident to see your brother. So again, like that line there, I really like is where she's shocked that he would want to kill his brother. And then yeah. I think to her, that's also another thing of like, well, maybe he isn't as bad. And then one other thing just before about Arya here, before I pass it over to you, Jimmy, and maybe this is where they got it for the show. Remember like at the beginning of season 7, and I put a lot of this up to, I just feel like they didn't know what to do with Littlefinger, like how to mm-hmm. get rid of him. But there was that like little teasing of, well, maybe Arya is out for Sansa because of the note and, oh, you were there with Joffrey and all
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
Is like, maybe that's where they pulled some of this from, because there's really nothing maybe. More about it. Or maybe that is something that George was like, there's going to be some tension between the two.
Well, there's definitely tension earlier in the
series. But I don't know. I think it might just be a line that maybe overinterpreting, but that is where I remember back in season 7, some people referencing some of this stuff here and saying, well, that might be it. Or maybe it was just, they just didn't know what to do. So like, we'll just have Arya and Sansa against each other.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, would there maybe be tension in the books later on? Possibly, because that was it's a very real thing from the earlier books. But for me personally, I think that we are watching them go on a journey where they realize that family is kind of all they have. And whenever they reunite, I think it's going to be a positive experience. I also think the difference between the Hound wanting to kill his brother and Arya not really wanting to kill Sansa is like a very important distinction between the two. And one of the reasons why maybe Arya will look back on this and be like, well, I never want to get that far gone.
Right.
So, and you know, she's being trained as an assassin in A Dance with Dragons. So like, by all means, she has every opportunity to have the ability to kill Sansa if she ever wanted to, but it's going to be about using that power for the good, I think. So, certainly will be tension. It's a big moment and it has to happen. I think Sansa and Arya have to reunite.
Oh, they did. Yeah, they definitely will. I don't have any.
But even Sansa thinks about Arya in a different lens. You know, she might even start out with, oh, my, you know, annoying little sister Arya, and then being like, but I miss her. You know, there's some reflection on her part, too.
Yeah. So yeah, it continues on a little bit here, too. And then the talks about, like, even a dog gets tired of being kicked. If this young wolf has the wits the gods gave a toad, he'll make me a lordling and beg me to enter his service. He needs me. Though he may not know it yet. Maybe I'll even kill Gregor for him. He'd like that. He'll never take you, she spat back. Not you. Then I'll take as much gold as I can carry, laugh in his face, and ride off. If he doesn't take me, he'd be wise to kill me. But he won't. Too much his father's son. From what I hear, fine with me. Either way, I win. And so do you, she-wolf. So stop whimpering and snapping at me. I'm sick of it. Keep your mouth shut and do as I tell you. And maybe we'll be in time for your uncle's bloody wedding.
What a final line of the chapter. But I also want to point out something that I just really love about so much of George's writing again, is that a lot of plots move forward and there's failures and successes, but no series more than this one do things always go to shit for every character. Like Hound has this super cool plan and like completely falls apart. And it's so much better that it does for us as readers, because it's way more entertaining. But like, the Hound is like, this is the plan. You know, there's a couple ways this could go. Rob might take me and he might not. None of that happens. Like, none of that happens in the next few chapters. It all goes to shit like it always does. And that's because a lot of people cannot account for what other people's motivations are in this world, because information travels at a limited speed, which is one of my favorite devices that George is using here. And he even uses it with Arya. Arya had no idea about Blackwater. He had no idea that the Hound had ran away, right? There was no way for her to know that information. So she's getting educated right now about like current events, at least from the Hound's perspective.
Yeah.
And the Hound can't account for everything that's going on behind the scenes with the Boltons and the Lannisters. So it's just like everyone's plans fall apart because they just have lack of vision. Because
it's an enormous game of telephone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so good. It's so dramatic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, hey, let me pull up. And this is Arya's. This is really like her, you know, the list, right? So we see the list here. She huddled down and held her tongue. Valar Morghulis, she thought sullenly. Sir Ilan, Sir Meryn, King Joffrey, Queen Cersei, Dunsan, Polliver, Wrath the Sweetling, Sir Gregler, and the Ticker, and the Hound, the Hound, the Hound. So we know on this list, Some of these people she's not going to get. She obviously doesn't get Joffrey. And
well, that, yeah, I think this is a subversion of her storyline.
Right. She doesn't get Joffrey. You could argue she doesn't get the mountain. I mean, technically speaking, Sir Gregor does die due to Oberyn, I guess, or maybe he does. I don't know. That's why the whole head of the mountain thing is totally kind of different in the books. And the Hound, and she may not get Cersei either.
Mm-mm. No, I don't think she gets Cersei. No.
Yeah. One character she could get that just disappears from the show is Sir Illyn.
Yeah, and Illyn's a weird one because he trains with Jaime after Jaime loses his hand. Like, Illyn Payne, becomes, very different from the show, obviously.
I think, why did he disappear from the, I think the actor died, and then.
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe. I have to look it up. I know that the training they swapped out with Bronn, which I think did work better for the show.
Yeah, you get to streamline stuff, yeah. And Bronn was popular. But Sir Illyn Payne's, he's relevant in the series in many ways. And remember, they talk about, man, if he could talk, what he would tell us. And yeah. I've always wondered, are we going to see some fantastical element where...
No, the actor did die, but it wasn't during Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. Well, rest in peace to him.
Although it is weird. I guess looking seeing pictures of him and other things because it's so just Illyn Payne.
Yeah.
he's a guitar player and all I'm seeing here. Let me pull this up here. He's playing guitar and all I can see is Illyn Payne.
he's on the axe. He usually has a different type of axe.
Yeah, so weird. But yeah, I think he just he just disappears, and then I guess he was mentioned, but then we just never see him again.
I think he has a more significant role in the books, and like I said, with his tongue being removed, obviously it was a huge downer because he has so much information because he was around so many pivotal moments. Do you think there's a chance there's a fantastical moment later in the series where he gets his tongue back?
No,
Matt. You're supposed to agree with every crazy theory. Literally that guy.
I don't agree with that.
You always go, and then I'm the one who's always it's not true. What are you're stabbing me in the back right now? Live?
I'm not stabbing you in the back. I don't know. I don't know what his... A lot of people think he may have some big role to play in the future. I don't know that he's going to have a big role.
No, he's not, and he's not going to grow back his tongue, but I thought it'd be funny.
Well, there's always the possibility, I suppose.
Oh, but... here we go.
But
the more outlandish I make it seem, the more likely Matt is to agree with it.
Well, we got a lot of pushback on our Benjen thing. It's really weird.
Wait, what?
Yeah. It's just so TikTok and YouTube and stuff like that, or the Cold Hands thing.
Wait, do they think it's Benjen?
Well, no. Some people were saying that it couldn't be Dunk because they're like, well, how would Dunk get up there? Because Dunk died at Summerhall. It's like, well, you got to look at the text.
Well,
clear that Dunk died at Summerhall.
I mean, it's pure speculation.
Well, because the ink was blotted.
Yeah.
Right. So it's an incomplete story. Purposefully, it's an incomplete story. And then some people were saying it would be too old. It's like, well. It's possible that Cold Hands is even older than Dunk the Tall.
Oh yeah, it could be someone totally different. As long as they're not saying it's Benjen, we know it's not Benjen.
Yeah, there's no way it's Benjen.
Oh, I'm okay if they think I'm dumb. That's fine.
Nah,
it's a fun theory. And
somebody left us an amazing comment. I'll have to pull it up. We might have to do a
full. Is it Lady Ashley? It's always Lady Ashley.
Lady Ashley does always leave. No, somebody left us a comment, and they were talking about how Cold Hands is actually future Bran stuck in time. And
oh, jeez.
No, it's really good. Actually.
Okay,
We're gonna have to do a Raven. No, it was really good. Actually,
I will entertain anything
because it talks about how Cold Hands is your monster and stuff like that, dude. It's really good. Actually,
it's actually Jojen reincarnated.
Maybe. But okay, let's pull up. I'll pull up some of the quotes and stuff of the chapter because again, this is actually a pretty short chapter. There's a little bit of lore dumping, that we get here. But really, the summary kind of really sums it up. It's not a particularly long chapter, and I think the big part of this is really that end conversation, which we already went over, which is the Arya hound dynamic, yeah, where they're beginning, she's beginning to really realize that he's not maybe as bad as she immediately had thought.
Tons of tension there still, obviously, but
yeah. So I'll just pull some stuff I thought was kind of interesting on Reddit. So some people are saying, quote of the chapter, "So stop whimpering and snapping at me. I'm sick of it. Keep your mouth shut and do as I tell you. And maybe we'll be in time for your uncle's bloody wedding." As Jimmy had pointed out, bloody wedding. Come on, George. There's, you know, straight up foreshadowing. "Knights have no bloody honor. Time you learn that, old man. The ferry won't cross back till morning," he said, "and there, and that lot won't be taking paper promises from the next fools to come along. If your friends are chasing us, they're going to need to be bloody strong swimmers. While Clegane isn't the most honorable person in Westeros, he isn't the stupidest either. He manages to get a free ride across the river and prevents the Brotherhood without banners from doing the same thing in one fell swoop." Not bad. So it also kind of shows you he does really know his way around the countryside, which I think is also something that Arya picks up from him. I know when we, like, we talk about it as like more of his like moral compass and, yeah, you know, and killing people and thinking more about like what killing means, because that's going to become a big part of her. It's also kind of like some good survival skills that she picks up as well, which I think will be part, I think, similar to what we saw in the show. When, you know, she comes back and she is on her own, right? When she meets up with Ed Sheeran.
Yeah. Yes. No. No, TND. Don't do it. Hank. Hank.
I'll be honest, I'm really not super familiar with Ed Sheeran's music. I mean, like, I've heard it, but I don't, like, you know, really, like, follow or listen to it or whatever. So it was a much bigger deal for a lot of other people than me.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know, man. I wasn't as mad about Ed Sheeran being in the show as everyone else on the planet, but I didn't necessarily love it.
Yeah. Some of the comments, people are saying, hey, Sandor is actually pretty patient with Arya. The little twit is trying to kill him at every opportunity, and he threatens, yells, and ties her up and gives her tons of warnings, but he doesn't beat her to keep her in line.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, he never strikes her, which is interesting. Like, he, you know, it's kind of like he's the kind of guy where he's just like putting his hand down and she's just like, you know, yeah, like trying to get it, like waving his arms, trying to hit him, but can't actually do it. And then by the end, I think they do come along. And which do you like the book version of how they separate more, or the show version?
I actually think I enjoy the book version more. I know that it's kind of a cool, like, it's a culmination of a lot of things. And then obviously we have Brienne in there as well, like in the show, right? Because Brienne, yeah, and the Hound fight. And that is epic, by the way. I love that scene. But I actually like Brienne's story in the books more.
I agree. Yeah. I'll be honest with you, I hated that.
Did you?
Yeah, I just like, because I'm like the entire time I'm actually rooting for the Hound.
Yeah, and you don't really.
And it's like, Brienne, what the fuck are you doing? Like, Arya is like, I'm fine. Like, I'm good.
I'm good, dude.
And yeah, like, if anything, it's like, you're the stranger danger, right?
that's actually a good point. Yeah.
It's like, I don't know you. Like, why am I going to go with you and Brienne's? So it worked, I think.
It's fine. Yeah, like, it's spectacle. It's drama.
It worked in the show where you don't have as much time for everything else. But
yeah,
I mean, it's good. It's one of the things where I didn't like it for Brienne. I was like, I was actively rooting against her. I was rooting for the Hound to kick her ass, to be entirely like,
I get it. He's on a redemption arc. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's one of those things I think is just it's way better in the books.
Yeah, I would agree. I just think I also think Brienne's storyline stands alone more, mm-hmm, in the books. I mean, she's such a pivotal piece of Beasts for Crows. Mm-hmm. And runs in direct parallel with Jaime, and I don't know, I just thought that entire storyline was better in the books, and especially for how it ended. You know, a lot of people hated the Brienne and Jaime ending. I have thoughts about it, but I think Brienne in the books is going to be a lot more compelling once we see her kind of realize, you know, in many ways that a knight isn't exactly what you think it is, which is very parallel to Dunk.
Yeah,
I mean, Dunk goes through the same thing.
I think one of the reasons they did it in the show was also, I feel like they wanted to give Brienne some wins against have her fight like other well-known people to build up the idea that she is actually that legitimate. Because then later we see her fight Arya. I mean, they're training, like they're sparring against each other, like yeah. that, you know, that fight. And Bran does get Arya a little bit, you know, I mean, Arya ends up really winning the whole thing, but Brienne does hold her own against Arya.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's, I think that was really another reason why they did that, was to try and, okay, show Brienne versus the Hound, like, you know, and it was kind of one of those things where it's like they weren't fighting on the best surface.
Oh yeah, it's a mess.
It's like it's just a mess. Like they're on like a rocky hill and stuff like that. And then he ends up just kind of falling, you know, tumbling down. So it wasn't really like, hey, like the Hound versus the Viper, where they're fighting on flat surface,
perfectly flat.
Right. You get to pick whatever, because I kind of think the Hound would beat her.
I think you're just misogynistic, Matt.
Wow. But then at the same time, it's like the Hound gets hit by Beric and Darian. I don't know.
Hey, any given Sunday.
Yeah, but I think the Hound, we're going to see the Hound do Clegane Bowl, and
we'll see how that goes. I wonder if that'll be in Dream for Spring or.
Yeah.
Who knows? We did get some news, by the way, while we were right online. It's very small, but I want to read it because I think it's kind of interesting. This is from the Westerosi's X account, Twitter account, and this is coming from a podcast with Ryan Condell. The scripts and tone meetings for all 8 episodes of House Dragon are complete. The actors have episodes 1 through 6 currently, and the showrunner Ryan Condell says something that from the A Song of Ice and Fire lore and books that has never appeared on screen will be making an appearance in this season of House of the Dragon. What do you think? That a lot of people are saying Valyria. People are thinking it's going to be Valyria.
Hold on, read that again. I didn't hear exactly what you said. That yeah.
Showrunner Condell says something from the A Song of Ice and Fire lore and books that has never appeared on screen is making an appearance this season.
Oh yeah, that's probably Valyria.
Yeah, someone said a flashback to Balerion. I don't think they would waste CGI budget on that. I think it's probably going to be Valyria.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could have a Daemon dream sequence.
Yeah.
About
that. Yeah. That's a good point.
Which, by the way, for people listening, we did do a Patreon episode last week, and it's up on Apple and Patreon. We talked all about that.
Banger.
Weirwood dreams and visions, and what that has to do with it. So, a little plug for that here at the end of today's episode. So, anything else, Jimmy?
No, that's it, man. Always a pleasure to be in a Storm of Swords.
Yeah, it's about to really, really pick up. Like we said, short chapter. Sometimes you just hit short chapters and is what it is. But next time we will be back with things are about to pick up on the other side for John. So I want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. Our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, chapter 48, John 6.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.